This is a conversation for the record. This is an opportunity to connect, to expand, and to learn. This is a peek inside the heart and mind of a community on a hero's journey through a dark wood. This is more than a podcast. This is Find a Way. Welcome to part two of my conversation with Clark Durant. Clark and I woke up at 5:30 in the morning to have this conversation. So please, by all means, enjoy the low, rumbly sound of our sleepy voices amongst the songs of the morning birds as we find our way to the pathless path, discuss the beauty of creativity and collaboration, and sing the praises of the friends and partners who help us along the way. Thank you for finding your way here today. Enjoy.
That is a possibility.
Yeah. Yeah, possibilities. That's kind of like the name of our game, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, say more. We'll say more about that. Why does the word possibility resonate for you?
I think the older I get, the more possibilities I recognize, which is funny. It's kind of the opposite of what the conventional idea of aging is.
Sure.
So maybe it's not that there's more, but maybe I'm just surprised at how many I've retained from childhood. And it's really one of the main things that drives me to do what I do is the possibilities. Just
yeah.
what can come from some inner work, what can come from some community work, what can come from sort of like following the signs, whatever you want to call that, you know,
sure.
Following my instincts and letting things present themselves as they come. It's exciting. It's like a story unfolding, and there's all these possibilities for the outcome.
Yeah, I love that so much. There's the thing that comes to mind for me is like oftentimes uncertainty has a negative connotation to it,
right.
And that we're trying to avoid it if possible and
yeah.
control or predict as much as we can at every scale of our lives. And the idea of kind of positive uncertainty where, you know, a possibility, something that, you know, may or may not come to pass, but that you can kind of gently cultivate or creatively cultivate it. There's something about like you're dancing with the mystery there,
and right.
co-creating with the mystery, which just seems like so much fun.
100. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That collaboration and the mystery too. I mean, that's it. That's, you know, for me, possibility and mystery are sort of intertwined that way. Where I revel in the times when I don't get overwhelmed by the possibilities, where I'm not like, well, what if this happens, or what if this happens, or this could happen, or this could happen, and instead, kind of sit back and say like, anything could happen.
Sure.
I don't know what's going to happen.
Sure.
Let's just keep going. And there's a certain pleasure that I get by letting things happen, even when all reason tells me that this could turn out bad, this could
sure.
be, you know, and just kind of saying, well, let's see what happens.
Sure.
You know, so often the warnings are wrong, you know,
right.
the fear is wrong, or I should say what the fear is making me worry about is not what comes to pass. That's when it feels like magic. That's when it feels like, you know, the mystery is rewarding my curiosity,
right.
You know, just by going with it.
Yeah. I love that. there's something, I mean, I think that this is a big part of the musical journey.
Yes.
That you and I have both been on in our, each in our own ways. And just trusting that, if I follow my own creative process and share my music, kind of whatever is going to come from that is going to come from that.
Mm-hmm.
And that I won't necessarily know what that is.
Yeah.
But that there's great joy in just creating and sharing it.
That seems to be the purest path, is the desire to share and play and express. And when it becomes a journey of seeking fame or seeking wealth or anything, I don't think there's anything wrong with the desire for that.
Sure.
I know that it's not the fame thing is not for me, or at least I, maybe that's a mystery. Maybe I'm making a decision too soon, but I don't think that I would do well with fame or enjoy it. But, I know that it feels good to share and it feels good to perform and it feels good to create.
Mm-hmm.
And so that path is a wonderful one for mystery, because I don't know what's going to come of it. Just, I think having the desire is part of the key to opening other doors.
Totally. Yeah. It's interesting. What is the, this question of like, who are you creating for?
Right.
Or like, who is the audience? And at one extreme, it would be kind of the audience of one, like I'm just my own curiosity, my own joy in creation is like enough. And here I am, feeling my way through the process.
Right.
And that's its own special thing. And then there's like creating for intimate friends. So, a small group of people who understand you and understand your creative journey or your music or whatever the case may be. And it's just sharing with a few friends, or like sharing with my children, writing songs that I would sing with them at night. And then that circle can kind of expand outward from there to include and encompass more people, kind of thing. I was just thinking yesterday, I had my piano lesson, and I take lessons from the same teacher, Miss Cindy, that my kids take lessons from. And she's
she's great.
She's awesome.
Yeah.
I really love her so much. And, we have a recital in about a month, and I don't have a recital piece picked out. And so this has happened a couple times before. And so I could pick something out and learn it, or like the next level challenge would be like I could write something.
Yeah.
And this is the perfect chance to just write something.
Definitely.
And so I was saying, okay, I'm gonna write something. And we did this fun little exercise where she was like, what's your normal writing process? How do the songs come to you? And normally what would happen for me is I would get a melody, and then I may put chords around it. I may find words that like feel right for that melody.
Yeah.
And then I would start to kind of build out the harmonies and the rhythm. And that would either be, is this a verse or a chorus? And then I would, if it's the one, I'd, then try to figure out the other kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it would kind of spiral out from there. But so she was like, okay, well, let's come at it from a totally different direction. So
I love it. Yeah.
Let's just start with,
of course, she's just going to like throw a bomb into
exactly.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So she was like, let's start with the bass groove.
Mm.
And so we were just messing around with different bass grooves, and it was really fun. So I've got three little song seeds from the lesson, but I really love the higher order lesson is just that there are so many ways to wind your wind your way through the creative process and get to something really beautiful.
Yeah, that, I mean, that path of mystery is so satisfying, you know, and frustrating sometimes too. Yeah. But I'm amazed at the wide range of style that comes out of me depending on the mode of creation.
Yeah. You know,
obviously I spend most of my songwriting happens when I'm just by myself and I'm playing piano or guitar or something. And I write a certain kind of song because of that, you know, because if I'm by myself playing piano, then I've got to provide the drive, the rhythm, the, you know, but if I, for example, a band that it's technically still going, but we haven't put out anything in a long time, but this has been the Slims that I created with my friend Travis. Our mode of creation was a real, you know, Travis is an incredibly gifted guitarist and singer and songwriter, but, you know, his forte is guitar, even though he pushes himself to learn piano and he's a killer bassist and he's a really good drummer. That we would write songs with, it started off with him wanting to play drums. I want to play drums more. And so I'd come over and get on the bass, or I'd get on the piano, sometimes the guitar, and we would just jam, and something would come out of it at some point. There would be 20 minutes into it, something would happen, and we'd go, ooh, that's something. And when I listen to the music that we make that way, sometimes I'm like, is that me? Did I come up with that bass line? Did I come up with that, like, that part that's, you know, that does not feel like me? Hey, Puma. Puma returns.
She wants to be in the mix here.
But yeah, it's wild the way that creativity displays and showcases the different parts of us.
Yes.
You know, based on stimulus.
Yes.
Based on, you know, which door we open to get into the creative realm.
Yes. Yes. And there's some that it's a dialogue, you know, it's like this dialogical thing where, the loop of, listening and responding, it's conversational.
Right.
Where I don't know what you're going to do on the organ or on the keys. And, you don't know what Travis is going to do on the drums, and he doesn't know what you're going to do with your instrument. And so, but we just feed back on each other in this beautiful way. I love that, those types of co-creative dances.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there comes that moment where you do know what the other person's going to do. There comes that, like, telepathy or whatever you want to call it. I mean, that's another example of, I think it's a form of magic that we dismiss because it seems mundane.
Right.
I don't know how it could seem mundane, but a moment where you can be on one side of the room and the other person's on the other side and you're playing and playing, all of a sudden there's this click, there's this, like, switch over to where I know that he's going to do a fill in a second and I'm going to do this thing. And, like, I've had experiences even where especially with Travis, he and I really created a strong bond that way.
Yeah.
And I also, the only other person I feel like I've had that strong bond with is, the first drummer I was ever in a band with. It was my friend, Jake in college. There would be moments where I knew what was going to happen. He knew what was going to happen. And we would even mimic each other's rhythm. Like, if we were playing something like da 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 dun 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 dun, you know, and somehow we both knew that we were going to go dun 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 dun. And the only way to understand it is thinking like we were, our brains were melding. There's, you know, the fact that we have access to that and don't worship it. You know, like it's a travesty, really.
I mean, I think on some level, I think we do worship it in that. Right. Like that is what fills stadiums, and
you're right.
People are, and music is pulled into every type of religious and spiritual type experience.
You're right.
And but we definitely don't. I mean, let me speak for myself here, which is, I would say until I really began down that road as a musician, like musical practitioner type.
Yeah.
I could know that I loved music and that it moved me and that it made me feel connected to other people, but I wouldn't have been able to necessarily like put my finger on why. I don't know that I can put my finger on why right now, but like there's still an aspect to it of this idea of transferring emotional content at a distance.
Yes.
Like kind of heart to heart transfer instead of going through the routing things through the head with words.
Right.
But instead to like just share a vibe and a feeling, like literally vibrations pulsing through the air.
Yes. Right.
And that can make you feel something. Is so wild and cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it really, it brings people together.
Yeah.
You know, and it brings people together in so many different ways. Like it, like you mentioned, like at a concert, all of a sudden there's, you know, 50,000 people stomping their feet in the same rhythm, and they're feeling the same thing in their chest and in their heart and their heads, and they're singing the same words, and they're, you know, like that's pretty impressive. Yeah. Right. But then it also brings people together in the journey to create, you know, the, yeah, like you write a song, you right. know, and then you seek someone or others to bring that song together.
Yeah.
Or to flesh it out, you know, or to jam or something like that. And in that way, it's magnetic. It brings people together. I attribute my connection to this community that we have here in Gainesville, which is magical. Mm-hmm. and just, you know, heavenly in some ways. I attribute that to music. It's, yeah, it's all these people. I mean, there's so many people in it who aren't performers.
Right.
But I don't know anybody in our community who doesn't have some appreciation or worship of music. Hmm. And it's such an eclectic group, you know, and that's what makes the community so strong. Hmm. Is that there's no holes. Everybody's represented in a group like that. You know, it really brings us together, and it makes for, I mean, the term is strange bedfellows, but I don't think strange doesn't feel right to me. It's just like unpredictable bedfellows, you know,
sure,
people that I've engaged with to make music, right, where I'm like, I don't think I would have, I'm not sure I would have known that we would become such close friends if it wasn't for this moment of creation.
Yeah, beautiful.
Where I see like, oh, this person is a beautiful person with, you know,
these gifts. And,
oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. These inspirations. Yeah. I love that, Colin. Music is one, you know, version of this. Can we talk about Thrive a little bit?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I think that this is another expression of a similar process for me of trying something and seeing how it lands on somebody else, and then iterating on it, refining it, this type of thing. So my friend Liam and I started Thrive Circle 5 or 6 years ago now. And the intent was to create a container where people could more gracefully make change in their lives. A lot of initiatives really focused on habit change.
Right.
breaking bad habits and cultivating good habits, pulling weeds, planting seeds. Yeah. And so that was the initial focus, was trying to make that more of a game so that it could be fun to make change like that.
Yeah.
And so we explored a few different variations on that. I won't take you through all of them, but the one that was like the initial seed of the idea was just that, creating an arrangement where each person can pick what it is that they're trying to do each day, a practice or a task. And then if they don't do their thing, they would have to pay $1 into the pot.
Okay.
And then they would have a buddy who would have to match that payment. So like,
oh, so it's not just on you.
Not just on you. Your buddy has to pay if you don't do your thing.
That's sinister.
Yes, I know. I know. And it was so much more effective. It, like there, what we found was that people don't really care about paying the dollar themselves. But the buddy's dollar is like, ooh.
That's
sorry.
Such a good twist.
Yeah. So that was the initial idea. And we ran with that for a little while and kind of played with that. And ultimately, we decided that the money piece of that was a distraction and that it wasn't actually, it was focusing people too much on compliance and just kind of doing whatever they said they, you know, checking the box, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see it being a great way to help people feel what it's like to change, even though maybe it's not happening at the level, the deepest level that you're looking for, right? They're changing for something shallow, like to make sure we don't have to pay this dollar, but whether or not it's like taking root in their heart, you know, is maybe that's not happening.
Right.
But, you know, it's a good, you know, stick your toe in the water.
Exactly. Stick your toe in the water. And like, there, shallow things can have incredible power.
Definitely.
In the right configuration.
Of course.
And so I that was the initial, that was the initial impetus or idea that we were trying to, bring to life. And we tested that, you know, probably with 75 different friends with different circles over a period of a couple of years. But it became clear that this, it wasn't actually something that people would want to do on a regular basis, and created the wrong relationship to change. Mm. What we do now is we call it mindful doing together. And we have these dojo sessions where we join a Zoom together and people share their intention of what they want to do, say, in their morning practice. And you'd end up having about 80 minutes to go do whatever it is that you want to do. And the approach is to do that with open-hearted presence.
Right.
Whatever that is, it's not just to hammer it out, but instead to welcome the fullness of the experience, that any of the discomfort that comes up as you do it, any of the resistance that you encounter, the obstacles, like you and I are trying to get set up here for our conversation and the mics aren't, you know, kind of bolting on where we want them to be able to use the booms. Just kind of embracing those things and letting those things be teachers to us. Letting those things change us in some kind of way.
Yeah. When I first encountered Thrive Circle, the immediate hurdle that I recognized for you and for Liam is that you are taking on such a difficult task for people, because change doesn't happen with like the click of a mouse. It doesn't happen with, you know, it starts to happen with the click of a mouse. It begins to happen with your first dojo session. It begins to happen with every step you take. And in our culture, people are used to clicking and the thing is there. The thing arrives at your doorstep. The thing, you know, shows up on your screen and it's like, here's your answer. I mean, especially now with like ChatGPT, and like people are like, I want an essay about this thing, and there it is.
Right.
It's written. And you are not selling that you are presenting an opportunity for this devotion to step by step change, and the change isn't always a step forward. Sometimes it's a step back. Sometimes for the listeners, we are recording this conversation during a dojo session. We got together this morning at 5:55 in the morning.
Yeah.
Clark checked everybody in on the Thrive Circle dojo session, and everybody had their goal for the day. Clark's goal was we're gonna do this follow-up episode that we've been trying to do for
six months. Yeah, exactly.
and so, you know, here we are sitting here. What time is it now?
6:56.
It's 6:56, and just like Clark said, we stumbled here and there trying to get all the mics set up and things like that. And the lesson, like you said, isn't like, we gotta get the mics going because the dojo session doesn't start until we sit down and start talking.
Sure.
The lesson is like, here's the first thing. Okay, we're going to solve that. Here's the next thing. We're going to solve that. And then we're going to sit and we're going to bask with our warm drinks and our comfy seats. And we got Puma sitting in our lap or in your lap.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's all part of it. And then when you check back in about half an hour or so?
Sure.
And about half an hour, when you check back in, we're going to say, like, this is what happened, right?
Yeah. Sure. So you could think of this as doing hard things with love.
Yeah.
With joy. And part of why that is so powerful to me is that our lives have this microcosmic quality where how we do anything is how we do everything. Mm. So just like how we do this little thing is a reflection of a deeper pattern that applies to almost every other thing.
Right.
And the reason that's like an empirical statement. Is that true? It might not be true. The reason why I believe it's true is because we carry a certain relationship with ourselves to everything else that we touch and do. And so if I'm in general somebody who is trying to seem hyper competent and very serious and always prepared, then, and where I really don't want other people to see me making any mistakes,
right?
Then that is gonna present here when we encounter our first obstacle. It's gonna spin me out in a certain way.
Of course.
That is also how I might spin out if I run into an obstacle doing my taxes or getting some attitude from my children or whatever the other resistance or frustration looks like. And so the magic is taking that microcosmic quality and reversing it in the sense of using anything to practice everything.
Yeah.
So it's like anything that's hard for me can be my teacher, not just of the technical aspects of that particular thing, but of how I relate to any challenge in my life, in my subjective experience. So I think that's, for me, that was like the nub of the insight. And that's why we focus on mindful doing as the core practice. And really, you know, it's the intention that we would share in this case would just be an intention for the use of the next 80 minutes together.
Right.
And the idea is that you go away and you see what you can do and try to make it happen, and then come back and share in the checkout. What did I do? What did I notice or learn?
Yeah.
And just that can, the effect of that can ramify out into other parts of the day,
mm-hmm.
where if I'm starting the day doing a hard thing, something that I had turned away from or put in my backlog because there was some element of, I don't know how to do it, or it has to be perfect, or, I don't know how to begin, you know, whatever the little reason it makes me uncomfortable, if I'm able to start my day turning towards those things, there's a great book called Eat That Frog. It's like that type of idea of like, start with the hard thing and then everything else is easier, you know, from there. So
sure.
That's a big part of the practice.
Right. Well, and it kind of goes back to the, one of the concepts we were discussing with, you know, music or sharing our creations is, I think one of the things that gets in our way, or at least that creates those discomforts and distracts us from that mindful doing with love, is this idea like it's supposed to be a thing. This 80 minutes is supposed to be this,
yeah,
as opposed to like, I'm supposed to try to do this during this 80 minutes, you know, and like the, that approach is so different, you know, and like you said, it kind of like radiates out once it becomes practice.
Yeah,
it radiates out into so many other things. Like, I'm supposed to make dinner and dinner's supposed to be at 7 o'clock. Well, let's see what happens, you know. I'm gonna start cooking,
right?
And you know, and I'm not really sure why I just thought of cooking, probably because I'm a food oriented person.
Sure.
But you know, that's always been my approach to cooking, is I'll say like, you know, my goal is to make this, but I don't know what it's going to end up like. You know, I'll get halfway through my food prep and think like, you know, this would be kind of good, and maybe this would be fun, and I'm going to add this spice and this thing, and it ends up very different than I initially intended. That's fun. That's, you know, and sometimes it blows up in your face, but it's still fun to approach things like that.
Yeah, totally. It is so fun. And, you know, taking the cooking analogy and what we were talking about before with music, there's like the one little adventure of this meal. And within that, there are these different... Mm-hmm. choices that we make, and
yes,
kind of
ingredients,
misadventures, yeah, yes, that can actually happen, and then there's like how it also plays out over time. And I'm trying to remember, I don't think we spoke about this last time, but one of the frames that I found really useful that I've woven into the Thrive experience is this idea of a pathless path.
Mm.
And it's a term that comes from Mahayana Buddhism. And my understanding of the origin is that there was a reaction at some point against the, all of the attempts to codify the path for Buddhist practitioners, for like students of the Buddha, and that there was this growing sense of attachment to, this is the path, mm, this is the way, and this, you can see this in almost anything that learning that at one point was fresh can become calcified into a kind of dogma or an empty ritual that it doesn't have life and vitality and consciousness kind of still held within it. And so the pathless path is a pointer to the idea that, and in this case, it'd be like the pathless path to awakening.
Mm.
But I think it has a much broader application than that journey. So in that context, it would mean something like the way that you would get there will be surprising and different and complex, and the openings that lead you there will require you to stay present to this moment, and then to this moment, and then to this moment, and that there isn't a checklist that,
right,
you can just mindlessly execute to an awakening experience. There's a necessary grappling with the specificity of the moments that you're finding your way through. Okay.
Yeah.
And that so the brilliance of that, so it's so powerful to see things that way. And it doesn't mean that there isn't an underlying kind of logic or an underlying causal constraints that are real. Doesn't mean that like my path can be whatever I want it to be. Mm-hmm. There's still a path. It's not just pure pathlessness. And yet within that, there's this infinite set of possibilities like we started talking about this morning. So that's like, even though that's such a big, wild journey in particular to talk about, I think it applies in a microcosmic way to every other change that we would cultivate. So if I'm going to be learning to cook, there's a path aspect to that and a pathless aspect to that. And the path might be, you know, the recipe and the kind of standard ingredients that are referred to in that recipe and kind of the standard equipment that would be implied and normally used. And the pathless aspect might be the unique constraints of, you know, who I'm cooking for and when it needs to be cooked and the other things that are happening in my life that will constrain that. Mm-hmm. And we don't have this ingredient and, you know, and we have this allergy or whatever the case might be. And also how I relate to those challenges and those differences as they arise.
I see. Do you feel as though what you are presenting to people with Thrive is a way to become comfortable with the pathless path or to recognize your existence within the pathless path?
Yeah, 100% yes. Yeah, that like if you, and so this connects back to something that you just said earlier in this conversation, and I think we talked about this in the last one as well, this idea that in our experience in this time and place, there's this strange juxtaposition of the kind of infinite ease of the technology that we have at our fingertips and then the real challenges that we still experience emotionally and relationally as we encounter ourselves and the people that are closest to us.
Right.
And so it's like, well, ChatGPT can give me this incredible answer in 8.5 seconds, and I can order the meal to be delivered from any of these different types of cuisines around the world to my door in 30 minutes, you know, and I can order whatever object or tool that I need from a infinite warehouse.
Right.
And have that delivered. And this type, so that type of power of my whimsy generates a reaction almost, you know, like a magician of a kind. But this is the way, you know, but my children don't want to do what I want them to do, right? Or yeah. my spouse or my partner like doesn't like the way I'm handling something,
right?
And so that juxtaposition is potentially really challenging for people because the one inflates our egoic sense in one way, and then the other is such a challenge, a deflation to it. But so, yeah, pathless path. The pathless path, the first piece of that would be just beginning to see that it's the way is not as clear as you at first thought. So like the humility of like, oh, there's some little bit of pathlessness here. And to me, that's not just a subjective element. There's objective qualities to this moment mm-hmm. that if I'm present, I can receive and see, and that they can change me and work on me in different ways. Mm-hmm. And there can also be subjective elements to the path and how that's defined and shared and how I understand it. So there's something about it being like, just being, it's that recognizing that there is a co-creation. Let's say there's like three members of the band. There's me. There's like the deep causal pattern of this change that I'm trying to cultivate, whatever that is, whether it's a music practice, a change in a relationship, you know, a project that I'm trying to complete, something that I'm trying to take good care of and cultivate to flourish, you know, whatever that thing might be. There's an underlying causal pattern that is kind of like the path. That's one member of the band. And then another member of the band is like this situation and this moment, like in this time and place, the configuration of all the things that are coming together with real specificity. Mm-hmm. And then there's me, and I'm in dialogue with these two other friends, the deep specificity, the profound specificity of this moment, and the deep pattern of how this thing works in general. Mm. And that's why it can be so hard. That's why it's so easy to get like it when you're encumbered by expectations and, oh, I'm doing it wrong. And this is, you know, I'm failing to do the thing the way I'm supposed to. That's a sign that you're too dialed into the path, that you're not attending to the specificity of the moment in front of you and what's unfolding inside of you. If, on the other hand, you're all about your specific circumstances and this is just me and I can't ever be, you know, I couldn't do it any other way and I'm like, this is just how I am, that's a sign that you're getting really locked in on an identity around your specific,
right,
kind of, quote, pathless circumstances. And now you're turning away from some deeper patterns that actually govern whatever it is that you want to do.
Okay. So I like that. That analogy helps me. And I feel like, so let me see, let me take a crack at it then. Yeah. Sticking with music, the deeper pattern would be the creative process,
yeah,
right? Creating something from nothing, or I guess you can't do it from nothing,
yeah,
but
yeah,
the creative process, and the moment, the, you know, the specific circumstances would be like, well, I'm creating something while somebody plays drums with me, or I'm creating something by myself with my piano, or I'm, so like these different factors that affect the deeper pattern, but the deeper pattern remains constant.
Yeah, the deeper pattern would be like, hey, practice actually matters.
Yeah.
You should really tune your instrument. you know, like, when you work with a collaborator, listening deeply to them will allow your collaboration to flourish.
Right.
So it's like, I could have some ideas about like, hey, I'm not about practice. I'm sorry. And like tuning, overrated. And like, this is my project, so I shouldn't have to listen. You should just listen to me. Right. And if that's what you've locked into, good luck on that music journey you're going down.
Right.
You know, it's like I don't know how far you're going to get, friend.
Yeah.
And so those, I think it's that type of thing where if I turn away from the actual realities of how this thing unfolds, then there's going to be consequences to that in my
right.
ability to move down the path.
I like that. That's good.
I'd love to just share a few gratitudes,
yeah,
for some of the friends who've been really integral to Thrive,
yeah,
and give a couple little shout outs.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So, you know, for my friend Liam Brady has been with me from the beginning of the whole journey. We've known each other since undergrad, so 20 years plus. And he kind of caught the germ of the idea in the beginning and initially was helping me tell the story of it with film and video. But he's such a brilliant guy and such a beautiful collaborator, and it became really invaluable to just have him as my counterpart and co-founder. And he has done, like, he learned how to do UX, UI design, like, for a while. He, like, was doing that design when we were unhappy with what we were getting.
Wow.
From a contractor that we worked with. And, you know, he's played a huge role in the product strategy and what it is exactly that we're building. So, we basically built an app that's in service of helping people make change in this way. And so Liam has been absolutely integral to that. And just like the willingness to look at the experiences, the data, and the experiences that we hear from other people who are using our product, and to look at our own experiences when we do it ourselves, and not shy away from the hard lessons that require us to change and kind of keep iterating.
Certainly.
So I would not be here still working on this without his companionship and his collaboration with me on this past. I'm very grateful to you, Liam. And then we have a whole team of developers who've been very helpful in going through this process. Martin Anev, Martin Deutschev, and Angel Venchev have been like the three guys who really built the app infrastructure. And because the core ideas have changed around the app over time, they haven't built one app. They've built like four or five apps, you know? It's like, it's not just one thing. And we have a joke now that if there's like a new feature idea, the first kind of question that we ask ourselves is, have we already built this at some point in the past? So that's a testimony to their patience and their willingness to go where the thread leads and where I lead. And so I'm incredibly grateful to each of those men for sticking with the journey and helping me to bring the vision to life in that kind of digital form.
Martin's
wife Dani has played a critical role both on the kind of quality assurance side, but also thinking through design challenges and UX and really pushing us to get close, to take a real close look at customer experience and just to like to literally watch somebody interact with the app to see what their experience is and to understand what's clear and what's not clear for them.
Sure.
So she's had a really beautiful influence on the project as well. And then there's like so many friends who have offered their time to be a part of various beta tests along the way. And I would want to give a special shout out to Griff, because Griff Roberts, who's also my bandmate, when we finished our Sparks in the Fire album together, and that work was done in August of last year, maybe July of last year, thereabouts. We turn to making these audio journeys that are meant to help people figure out what it would mean to mindfully do something by, like, what would it mean for me to have open-hearted presence in relationship to what I'm doing? And my friend Ben Gould created these ambient soundscapes that were kind of custom built for Thrive Circle and for these types of journeys. And then Griff and I sat down and worked with the material that Ben had given us to wrap it around these guided meditation type experiences. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Griff would then add instrumentation to the very beautiful layers that Ben had provided us. And, same thing that, you know, when we save an audio journey, it's like version 215,
right?
You know,
right.
It's so many iterations. I'm going to go over there after our conversation this morning. and work on the Courage audio journey, like the last little touches. So Griff, I'm so grateful to you for your patience and willingness to follow this through all the way to the end and make something that's really beautiful and timeless. And Ben, I'm grateful to you for your soundscapes and just the brilliance with which all these different layers serve to open up the heart. And
yeah.
I'm really blown away by this is such a great example. Oh, there's the alarm for the that's the alarm to go check people out, which I will do in 2 minutes.
Sure. Yeah.
I want to finish the thought on Ben, which is that he made so many, you know, he's got each soundscape might have 7 or 8 different layers to it, but the combination is so powerful in allowing the kind of poetry of the audio journey to come through and touch somebody in their, at an emotional level, at a heart level.
Yes.
And what I love about this is I could never have done it on my own. I could never have envisioned what that would sound like or feel like. If I had, I could never have made it happen without Griff's help.
Right.
You know, same thing on the app side with Liam. So like what has been created is something that I never would have designed or envisioned on a blank slate, you know, at the beginning of the journey. It's absolutely this kind of co-creative unfolding that we've been talking about.
Yeah. Do you want to go check them out?
I'm going to go check them out. Yeah, that sounds
okay,
great.
Cool.
Just put this on the drum.
Yeah, we're good.
And we're back.
That was so nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we just went and checked everybody out. The routine for these morning dojo sessions is, as described before, check in, set your intention, get your support from the community, and then sign off and go do your thing. And now we just checked back in. Everybody came in and reported their challenges, their successes, their surprises, yeah, their lessons.
For sure.
And it's such a nice, supportive environment. You know, everybody, I've been present for many of them before, and there's 0% judgment, there's 0%, I don't know. I mean, the goal is to be there and to report and to listen and support. And it's incredibly effective. It's a subtle motivator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. It's so interesting. I think that we are hardwired to do things together.
Yes.
And that's like at the core of this, there's something deep in us that wants to be a part of a team of people who are doing a hard thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that it gives us courage and gives us energy, and it allows us to know that we're doing what we should be doing on some level, because we're doing it in support with this group of people. And it just makes a world of difference to know that I'm working on what I need to do here and my friend is working on what they need to do there. So it's a simple thing. And then I'm going to come back and I'm going to share with them, what did I do? What did I notice or learn?
Right.
And just adding a little bit more of that intentional time and practicing relating to my experience more skillfully, you know, many days a week is a way of, it's like your selfing is like your musical practice, you know, that like you can actually practice relating to these little microcosms more skillfully with the support of this container. And that over time, I'm more inclined to lean into hard things, you know, approach them with wonder and curiosity and creativity and courage, and, you know, to learn the lessons that my life is laying down in front of me.
Right.
And that really adds up.
It certainly does.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's also, I mean, there's just something to feeling the support of others while tackling those things. I remember one of the best things I ever, one of the best things we ever did in our little circle of friends was to, you know, it's so common to get together for dinner or to get together for a movie or to get together for, you know, whatever. I mean, trips right. to the springs and things like that. Those are all wonderful things to do with friends. And yet for so long, there seemed to be this expectation of, well, creative time is solitude time. You know, when I create, if I'm going to write, I'm going to sit by myself and I'm going to write or, you know, whatever it is. And we started inviting people over for creative days.
Yeah.
Because we knew that everybody's got something they're working on.
Yeah.
And, you know, people would bring a freshly baked loaf of bread and honey and butter. And
jeez.
People would bring some tea over. People would bring whatever. And you all get together and then sit and work.
Yeah.
And we're all just, we're not talking. We're not, you know, maybe two people are working on the same thing. But just the atmosphere of knowing that, well, everybody else is doing their thing.
Right.
It there's a motivation in that just by itself. And I'm happy to see that it's not necessarily a physical proximity thing.
Right.
Because with Thrive Circle, we're not all in the same room.
No.
We're in a, you know, a digital room or a virtual room. But, it still works. I know that you're working on what you said you were going to work on. I know that the other people who show up were maybe far apart, but we're together in our task.
Right. Well, and like to be fair, I think each of us is going to encounter, we don't stay on the Zoom. We're not trying to lock you in and, you know, show us your screen so we know you're doing what you said you do. You know, like,
right.
No, we're all, signing off after the first 5 minutes. We're going and doing whatever we need to do in the real world. And then we're just coming back for 5 minutes to just report on that experience. And you're going to encounter temptations to procrastinate within that time block as well.
Of course.
That resistance doesn't just disappear entirely. But now you're relating to it differently. You know that other people are encountering it too. You know that the more time of that block you can really spend gracefully and usefully, the more good is going to come through, on your path. And you get better. I get better over time at really using those minutes as kind of gloriously, responsibly as I can.
Yeah.
But that's part of the journey of the experience. It's not that we're not trying to twist anybody's arm and kind of with hard accountability force them to do what they said they want to do. It's still about you relating to the work.
Right.
The other thing that was coming up there was just that the vision of where I would love this to go is where basically at any time of day, at any place in the world, you could sign on to Thrive. Let's say it's like at the hour, it's at 7:30, 8:30, at any time, on the half hour mark, you could sign in and say like, pair me up with somebody, and there would be somebody else somewhere who wants to also dig in and do some intentional work, do some mindful doing, and you'd be paired up with that person. You'd have a brief conversation together, then you'd go do whatever it is that you're doing, and then you'd come back and share at the end of the period.
Yeah.
And that by creating a little culture where that's what we do, we could make it much more scalable and flexible so that, I can do a 6 a.m. Monday through Friday, but there's other time slots that'd be really hard for me to facilitate something.
Mm-hmm.
And, we could build it so that it's very relational, and that you're getting, there's some beautiful serendipity in that too, that you don't know who's going to be on the other side of that. And you just know that they have some mindful doing. And what's amazing is, like, even in a group of seven or eight people, there's a few examples of things where somebody says, I'm cleaning the clutter off my desk, and somebody says, I'm working on my taxes, and somebody says, I'm working on this creative project. And for each of those things, there's a resonance in me where I have that work to do as well.
Mm.
And so I'm excited about building this community, because I think that's also going to be building up the serendipity.
Yes.
And who knows what good things will come.
Mm. Well put. Mm. I think that's my favorite thing about what you're doing. Again, it's unconventional in that the product is not packaged, right? The product it requires a certain amount of faith and understanding that you're getting into something that is like the path and the pathless path. It's, some of it is predictable.
Right.
You know that you're going to be checking in, but the unpredictable is what's happening today. Who, like, what is this person I'm going to talk to? What are they going to light up for me that I didn't? I'm going to work on a song today. What is this conversation with this maybe stranger, maybe friend, maybe acquaintance? What are they going to bring out in me that now is going to go into this project that I'm going to work on?
Right.
You know?
Yes.
So it's really, it's in a culture where we've been sort of trained to see value in a packaged product, and here's a thing that's going to do the same thing every time you push the button. You are offering something far more valuable, and yet does not fit in a package. It, you know, you could say maybe the package is the Thrive app, or you know, the meeting space, but you know, it's a mystery box. You know, in a way, the only thing is that you know that whatever you pull out of this mystery box, it's gonna contribute to your completion of a task, to your understanding of, you know, your path or your pathless path.
Right.
You know, it's gonna enhance you, but that aspect of mystery, just like we started talking about today, that I think is such a beautiful element to bring into everyday tasks like doing your taxes or, you know, cleaning up your desk.
I love that, Colin. And there's something that is, deeply challenging about the work that we turn away from, or like the things that we turn away from, because let me say it this way. If all Thrive Circle did was help each person execute on some things that they have been avoiding, I would say that's not enough.
Mm.
Okay, so it's like
we
can all generate an infinite list of things that we think we should do that we haven't been doing.
Mm.
And to me, there's kind of two elements to the container that we're creating that make it more than that and different than that. One aspect is trying to see what is the most important stuff that we're turning away from. So I could tell myself that, oh, I do procrastinate, but what I procrastinate on is, my taxes, or I've been meaning to, like, you know, finish this degree that I'm doing, or I've been meaning to, you know, finish this renovation on the back porch or whatever it is. And man, that's the stuff that I really need to get to that I haven't done. Maybe it is, but it could also be that there's a difficult conversation with somebody I love that I've been turning away from. Okay. Or it could be that my own health is not where it needs to be.
Right.
You know, for me to keep thriving on this planet for as long as I can, kind of thing. Or it could be, you know, that I'm out of integrity in the way that I do my work and I need to make a change, you know, whatever it might be. So there can be these much deeper things, you know, or like the most fundamental one could be that my whole experience is colored by my relationship with myself and the patterns that I have around the hard things that I encounter subjectively in my life, right? Yeah. So that last one is kind of that second differentiator for us, which is it's not just about getting things done and hammering things out. It's about how you relate to it, how you get it done.
Right.
And if you know the way broadly, you'll see it in everything. Miyamoto Musashi, like that type of idea. And that's the ultimate thing to procrastinate on, which is like, oh, I'm going to do all these things. And kind of the implicit assumption is, and then I'll be okay, or then I can let myself be happy, or then I'll feel better. And this kind of striving, this the kind of hustle mentality of like, if I just do these things, get to this status, then things will be good.
Sure.
And that's a fundamentally broken way of looking at things, or it's a fundamentally mistaken assumption. And so the deepest work is changing my relationship with the world itself, or like the my experience of myself as I encounter hard things. And so that's I just wanted to say that, because I don't, it's okay to come and use Thrive Circle to get your taxes done. And I want that for everybody.
Certainly.
Like, there's things that we all want to check off the list, but there's also a deeper transformation that's possible. And we're here for that too.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, that by far, that is what I'm talking about when I say the thing that can't be packaged, you know, it's, you know, being able to recognize that, you know, even something as mundane as doing your taxes, you should still do it from a place of knowing yourself and and being at peace with yourself and your family and the things that, like you said, that are more important, which is, I think, where some of those meditations come in that you provide as well, and like kind of help set those foundations so that, as you said before, I'm not sure if I'm going to get this right. If you learn to see the path broadly, you'll see it everywhere.
Yeah. If you know the way broadly, you'll see it in everything is the Miyamoto Musashi quote.
Which is why I think that's why, you know, the taxes thing is like kind of tickles us, right? It's like, well, if I can see the way in these fucking taxes,
yes,
then we can do it anyway.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, so how can people find Thrive Circle?
Yeah, great. So if you go to thrivecircle.com, you'll see what we've got there, and there's a sign-up process that you can go through, and that will kind of walk you through how we approach this stuff as well, and then that would then result in having a conversation with me about what work you'd want to do, or kind of what you see in your backlog of things that you'd tackle with this mindful doing. And then you would come along and try it out and see whether it works for you and whether it's valuable. You know, right now it's a couple weeks, but the formal thing is a couple weeks, but there's a more informal process that we go through to just allow people to really understand what's at stake for them. And then you can become a member and do that for a 3-month period or a 12-month period. That's kind of the journey.
And then as far as music goes, if it's all right with you, I would love to sort of send us off and send the audience off yes. with one of your songs.
Oh, amazing.
Do yeah. you, if you know the one...
We should do Everybody, I think.
Okay.
That's so the one.
I think we'll do Everybody then. Yeah. And so so when we finish, we'll have the song play. Where can people find your music?
That's great. I so appreciate that, Colin. So they can find it on kind of all the platforms
okay.
where you would stream music. And it's The Sparks and the Fire is the band name. The album is called Whistling in the Dark. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I would say the single on that is called Everybody.
Yeah.
And the kind of the line there is everybody's doing the best they can.
Love that one.
And I, you know, that's it. It's kind of a cliche thing, but it often doesn't seem true.
Right.
and that can really invite us to close up and hurt when we see the ways in which the people around us or the people out in the world broadly fall short of what we see as the good.
Right.
And so the invitation in the song is to like not let that close your heart.
Right.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful message, and the song is beautiful too. It's playful, and it's the right for me at least. It's the right atmosphere for considering such a hard concept to really, and it's one that I hold very dear to me, and yet I recognize that it's one of the hardest things to convince people of, you know,
for sure.
and myself sometimes too, you know, I'll look at some of the people doing things that are hurting others. And I say it to myself, I try to remind myself, like, I think they're doing the best they can do.
Right.
You know, they think that they're doing the right thing or whatever their upbringing was, whatever their, you know, whatever they were gifted or cursed with genetically.
Sure.
We're just doing the best we can do.
Right.
And it's like the clash of the best we can do, you know?
Right.
It's
totally,
you know, and it doesn't excuse it.
No,
it doesn't mean I'm okay with it, but it does help explain it,
yeah.
or it helps me, you know, exist with it. And so I appreciate that you put together, a song to promote that idea in the way that you did. How about some credits on the song?
I mean, yeah, great. Nice.
This is a selfish.
well, Colin, you're on the keys on there. I think we have you playing two different types of organ on that one,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep, yep.
We have like
a Rhodes sound.
We got the Rhodes, and we also have what was the other one?
There might have been just like an organ in the background
yeah.
there.
Yeah,
it's been
Rhodes.
A while. Again, it was like probably 6 or 7 months ago we did
right.
that. Yeah.
We've got...
Or longer than that, now that I think about it.
Probably a year ago.
Yeah.
We've got Anna Sorrento is the female vocalist on that song, and she has a bridge in the middle that's kind of like a solo that she
gorgeous.
Wrote, which is just so gorgeous.
Oh, my gosh.
Griff Roberts plays the bass and some guitar on that song.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did all of the audio right. production work, all of the kind of engineering as we were recording the song. And then we've got, he also did the drums on the song. And then we have, do we have Ben Derrico playing the cello on there? I don't know that we do on that track, but Ben plays the cello on a bunch of the other tracks on the album.
Cool. Yeah.
And he's just so wonderful. Third Eye Strings is his band. And
I'm pretty sure we got some Goofy Kiddos on there too, right?
And then Pepper and Kirk are on there as well. They come in, I think it's like the third chorus or
yeah.
something. We really are kind of bringing in more people singing along over time.
Yeah.
And so thank you, Colin. Yeah, man. Pepper and Kirk, my children came in to sing on that part, and they did like a few different vocal layers.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. They were into it. Yeah. It was great.
It was really awesome. And
then there's you.
And then, thank you. Yeah, I'm in there too. I'm singing the main vocal, and I played the guitar.
Right.
Yeah. And Danny from Pulp Arts also did a mix for us that was really gorgeous, and then it was also mastered over there at Pulp. So yeah. Grateful to Danny and the whole Pulp team.
Yeah, Pulp is really doing wonderful things for our community. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, so what a gift to have so many friends who have leaned into make that something that is special, because couldn't do it without all of those beautiful layers and contributions.
Yeah. Yeah. We're very lucky.
Yeah.
I'm feeling pretty lucky right now, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Me too.
Great way to start the day.
Yeah. Appreciate you.
Right back at you, Clark. All right. So here's everybody from the Spark and Fire. I'm sorry.
The Sparks and the Fire.
The Sparks and the Fire.
Yeah.
Man. I've messed that up more than once before. Kind of like a mental block.
It's all right. All right. I think it's because we keep changing the name.
Listen, I'm just doing the best I can.
There we go. All right. Here we are.
Everybody's doing doing the best they can. Everybody's playing.